I'm Eddie Lee Stokes. I'm an alcoholic.
And,
very happy to be here tonight. I think you ought to tell people about a week before they get here, or maybe even the afternoon before they get here. Gives you time to think about it. But I'd like to say happy birthday to Cheryl. She has been real special in my life. And happy birthday to Reggie today. It's a belly button birthday, but Reggie's been a part of my life for a long time, too. Let's see. Well, I was born in Macon, Georgia, and I grew up in a pretty good-sized family. I had four brothers and one sister. My dad was he was a staff sergeant in Marine Corps, and I fought in the Korean War, and like everybody else, he came home and made a large family, and raised Southern Baptist, and I look back at that now, and I'm glad that I had God in my life, you know, even then. I was the middle child. I had two older brothers, two younger brothers, and my sister was the oldest. So I've got the middle child syndrome. And but growing up for me, you know, I had a good family. You know, I really didn't. I didn't have any drinking in my family. We went to church three times a week up till the time I was 15 years old. And at that point, my parents gave us a choice, me and my older brother Buster, which me and him was pretty close growing up, and he was old enough to drive, so that's really when I quit going to church, and didn't really get back in, well, never have really got back into it until I got back to this program and found a God of my understanding. Had a normal high school. In high school, probably at age 16, started experimenting with drugs. Didn't really drink. My brother Buster, he started drinking when he was like 12 years old. And I kind of watched him, and I really didn't want anything to do with alcohol. By the time he was 18 years old, he had totaled five cars. And I knew I really didn't want that, so I really didn't start drinking until after I moved out. At 18, I moved out, and I guess I was codependent then. Mark appreciates that one there. I'd been dating my high school sweetheart, was my first wife, and at 18, her family was from California, and they were moving back to California. They'd been in Georgia for about, I guess 4 or 5 years, and they were moving back to California. And so I turned 18. 3 days later, I moved to California, followed her family out there, and lived with her family a couple of years. Ended up getting married. Didn't last very long. We were married for a couple of years, and by the time I'd been out there 3 years, I was ready to get back to Georgia, and we moved back to Georgia, and it wasn't long after that we got divorced. And that's pretty much when my drinking started. I don't know if it was, that fear of going out and meeting other people or whatever. And when I moved to California, I think it was the drinking age was 18 in Georgia. When I moved out to California, it was 21, so I really couldn't drink legal out there. And then when I moved back here, it's really when I started drinking on a regular basis. After that, I guess I stayed single for about 3 years, and I was from a small town. We moved to the outskirts of Macon, which is a little town called Lizella. And my parents had a nice house sitting on the hill, and it was a small county, and you know, everybody knew us. My mom was the clerk up at the courthouse, and after the night my divorce was final from my first wife, I got my first DUI, and I'd been to town, never drank liquor. You know, I'd had a few beers, but I never drank liquor. And that night I drank liquor, and I had my first blackout. I woke up, I was in a ditch, the state patrol was, you know, pulling me out of the car, and took me down to the county jail where I spent the night. Didn't really even know that I spent the night, you know, and I woke up that morning, and like I said, my mom worked at the courthouse, and the sheriff knew me as soon as he saw me and, you know, asked me what I was doing in there, which I really didn't know. you know, that was my first DUI, and at that time it cost me, I think, maybe $200, you know, and that was it. You know, I had a wrecked truck, but you know, for some reason, you know, I didn't even recognize that blackout, and I really didn't recognize it till I got into AA and you know, started looking back and realized the first time I drank liquor, I blacked out. And so I, you know, I dated around the county there and had a lot of fun, really. But, you know, I quit doing other things that I'd been doing, you know, the drugs, and I basically started drinking. And from that point, $50 fine.
Sorry.
That's okay. But, you know, I started dating around there, and things really didn't get any better as far as my life in this small town. After going to California and moving back to this little small town, things were, you know, just really too simple for me. And my sister had moved to Atlanta, and she'd been up here a few years, and she came down there one weekend and just told me to pack my stuff that I was going to Atlanta. So I packed my stuff and came to Atlanta, which I found when I got here that there was, you know, there was plenty to do. I was hanging out down off of 285 at Charlie Magruder's. Some of you might remember that place. And up and down. Hung out in Sandy Springs at, you know, Scooter's Cowboy Bar. And it was really, you know, I enjoyed dressing up like a cowboy and going out on the town. And even back in the disco days, I did that, you know. I stuck out like a sore thumb. But, you know, it got to be, you know, it was, you know, two or three nights a week type of thing, you know. I grew up in an era where you lived a party. I mean, you know, that's what you worked for. You worked so you could go out on the weekend and have a good time. And even then, I really knew I was drinking too much, but I didn't really think nothing about it. Because there was many nights that I, you know, I was living in East Cobb, and I was driving home from Sandy Springs and stuff, just shouldn't have been driving. And, you know, never got a DUI for that, but I never had any money either, you know. I've always worked all my life, and I do construction work. I'm a carpenter, the son of a carpenter. And my wife thought that was funny. But, you know, being in construction, you know, you had your days, and I always worked hard, and I always drank hard. And it, you know, it didn't really start off drinking the hard stuff. I was a beer drinker for years, and but I always had one. You know, I had to have at least one beer a day. That was, you know, part of my MO, I guess. And as time went on, I was working for a company that remodeled Kroger stores, and that's where wife number two come along. she was working there at the time, and I was there a lot. Worked a lot of hours, and I can remember back then, getting dressed in the parking lot, going out and partying at night, and just getting there at 7 a.m. ready to go to work, and changing out in the car and go to work. Eating some drugs, some speed. I never really got into the downers or acid or none of that stuff, but I always wanted something that could help me drink a little more and party a little more. But I started seeing this girl, and we fell in love. And it wasn't long after that, I found out that I had a son, and so we got married, and she had two kids. She had a son that was 3 and a daughter that was 7. So at age 26, I'm raising 3 kids. Same thing. I'm still in construction. I'm still working every day, and I wasn't even considering myself an alcoholic at the time. I probably was, and I was a functioning alcoholic because, I did get up and go to work every day. That was some really hard times, raising 3 kids. She didn't work. Living in Roswell, Georgia at the time. And I don't know. That's really where my everyday drinking kind of started taking off. Because I didn't miss a day. It was Sundays or Saturdays. You'd always make sure you had enough to get you through Sunday. And, we did all right for a while. We was living in nice homes. I'd rented all my life. And, we was renting nice homes. I was paying $700-$800 a month rent. And raising these kids. And, I really felt like I was doing pretty good, or doing what I thought. I don't know if it's what I thought God wanted me to do or what my parents expected me to do or what, but I was doing it. And at that time, I was working for myself, and I started running siding crews, framing crews, doing new construction. Kids were growing. We was playing sports. The boys played ball. Daughter was into gymnastics, and it was taking everything that I could make really to get by, especially with my drinking, because I had to have that. And at that time in my life, I'd quit all the drugs completely, but the alcohol was there for me. And, at that point in my life, I was stopping by bars, on the way home and getting trashed before I got home from work. And I got into a habit of drinking peppermint schnapps and chasing it with Budweisers. And I did that for probably 4 or 5 years. That was a pattern for me. And it was something about that peppermint schnapps when you took that big chug of it. When it hits your stomach, it was working. It was really working. And for me, I didn't really realize what it was doing and how it was kind of taking over my life. It really snuck up on me because it wasn't long after that, it was... I got to the point with the drinking that I got real big, too, because the peppermint schnapps and the beer. I got up to about 240 pounds. I'm not tall enough to carry that kind of weight. And, I look like the Pillsbury Doughboy. I actually had 3 chins, and I don't see how I did it back then because I was up and down working and stuff, and I really don't see how I got around. But... my good alcoholic thinking was, that's about the time I quit drinking the peppermint schnapps, and I started thinking, well, I need to lose some weight, so I started drinking scotch. Because, you know, I can mix that with water or, you know, some ice cubes, and it's like a diet drink. And, but, you know, that's my alcoholic thinking. And, you know, from that point, I was living in Roswell and, you know, and raising the kids and everything. And I really didn't do anything besides that. You know, I would stay at home. I was, you know, I had my armchair here and my remote control. And my cooler would be sitting beside the, you know, the chair sometimes and most of the time. And, you know, I was just raising kids. And I was really lucky back in those days because I was going by the bars in the afternoon, too, that I didn't get in a lot of trouble, you know. And let's see. Then we decided, well, a lot of my work was moving out toward Woodstock. I started trimming, doing interior trim on houses, and so we moved out to Woodstock and did the same thing. We rented a pretty nice home. Got into the sports and stuff out there at South Cherokee Recreation. Huh? Cheryl's good about telling me what to do, so I'll speak up a little bit. She's always been good about that. But at that time, you know, I started coaching Little League ball. I was, both of my boys were playing ball and football and baseball mostly, and some basketball. But, you know, I was out there coaching these kids, and before I went, I always had a couple of drinks, you know. And I never really realized that, you know, that it was affecting me out there. And we had a pretty good team. I mean, we were never criticized for anything. And I'd actually seen other coaches that they banned from the park because they were drinking and hollering at kids and stuff. And, you know, I was very lucky at that point in my life because that never happened. And but, you know, when you got a winning team, nobody really questions you. And, but I can remember going to all-star tournaments and stuff, and I wouldn't stay with the team. I'd go stay in another hotel, you know, away from the team, you know. And that's because I wanted to do my drinking. And at that point, it had really, you know, it had gotten pretty bad because I was an everyday liquor drinker. You know, I hadn't started drinking in the morning, and I hadn't started drinking, you know, by lunch at that point, but I still, when I got home, I was going to have a drink, and no matter what. And I can remember taking the kids to Six Flags and taking them out there and turning them loose at Six Flags, but I'd go back to the car because that's where I kept my liquor at. And I just wouldn't go anywhere without liquor. And like I said, it was something that, you know, hell, I thought everybody lived like that. But it wasn't long after that. You know, the kids were getting older. The son that was 3 when I married his mom, he was 13 at the time. And I don't know, work got kind of slow and my drinking kind of picked up. And at one point, I was making pretty good money. I mean, I was making enough to drink. But I guess it was 1989. We had a recession that kind of came through the area. And I had 10 builders that I was trimming houses for, and none of them had anything going on. You know, and I'd been working for these guys 5 or 6 years at the time, and all of a sudden, there's no work. And so the best, you know, I did what I knew best. I stayed at home and drank. And I got a DUI in 1990. I registered 0.38 that day. And I was taking my son, at the time was 13, to football practice over at Etowah. And I pulled up at the gas station over at the corner of Highway 5 and 92, pumped my gas, went in to pay for it. When I walked out, the sheriff was standing there, you know, and he says, you're walking kind of funny, ain't you, son? And I said, nope, you know. And so he gave me a sobriety test, which I flunked. And they were really nice enough to call my wife to come get my son at the gas station. And they put me in the car, and they took me to the hospital. And they said, you're not going to die on us before you go to jail. We're going to take you to the hospital first, have you checked out, and then we'll take you to jail. And they were really pretty nice. And at that point, I think I was already starting to surrender because, you know, I was telling the cops, you know, about my drinking problem and, you know, all the problems that I had. And they really were pretty nice to me. But it wasn't long after that, you know, that I got the DUI, you know, and I got the lawyer, and, you know, they put it off for 2 or 3 months like they do nowadays. And I ended up going, well, I didn't have anything to drink. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any work. And that was one way of God, you know, God got me here. Because without that, I went into the DTs. And I can remember sitting in my home, just curled up in the chair, you know, in a fetal position. And, you know, I think it was at that point where I called out, you know, to God for help. And I hadn't, called out to God in a long time. But apparently he heard me. And at that time, my brother-in-law was a preacher. And he was a preacher over in Smyrna. And he came and got me. And he took me to a detox center. I went up to ADAC up in Dalton, Georgia. I really didn't, I don't remember a whole lot about it, really. I was there for 5 days. First 3 days, I was on whatever they give you, the vitamins, the medication, all that crap. And I remember coming to and sitting around a table at group, which, you know, I never heard a word about AA there. So I'd signed myself in, and on that fifth day, you know, I was sober enough. I was ready to go. So I got out of there. And I didn't drink for 3 weeks. You know, that's the longest I hadn't drank in a long time. And but I did. I finally picked up again. And I drank up till the day I went to court, which was October the 19th, 1990. I drank up to about 2 o'clock in the morning before I had been in court at 9 o'clock the next morning. And I got in court, and I remember standing in front of the judge, you know, going through the DTs again, you know, shaking like a leaf. And it's really amazing what people go through today. They let me keep my license. They let me, I didn't serve any jail time. And I don't like to get emotional. This is some emotional stuff. But, you know, God was with me there. And, you know, when I finally got back from court, still had my license, I still needed to do something. I mean, you know, my life at home was really bad. I picked up the phone book. You know, and that's how I found the Howe place. You know, I'd never really, you know, I'd never heard of AA. I'd never, you know, I'd heard of it, but, you know, I didn't think, you know, there was any around here. And, you know, and there's 1,000 a day in the Atlanta area, you know. But I picked up that phone book, and somebody answered at the Howe place. I ain't got a clue who it was. They told me when the meetings were, so I went to my first meeting. I remember sitting in the, I had an old brown station wagon at the time, and I sit out in my brown station wagon, and somebody came over and said, the meetings are in the house, or in the building here. And so I got out, and I went to my first meeting. And, you know, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I sat down by a guy named Big Frank Earp, and had tattoos all over his arms, and a real rough guy. He'd been to prison, you know. There's a few other guys that had been to prison. Like I said, I'd spent the night in jail. I didn't remember that. And, you know, when they took me to jail for my second DUI, you know, I stayed 6 hours. That's the longest I ever stayed. And I remember walking in Cherokee County Jail, and there was this guy down there having an epileptic fit. You know, when I walked in the door, he was doing his thing, man. And, you know, it was weird. But, you know, I got to the Howe place, and it was part of my probation. They gave me 2 meetings a week for a year. It was part of my probation. Which, once I got there, I knew I was in the right place. I heard, you know, people sharing about hiding bottles, you know, stuff like that, which, you know, it didn't start out that way, but, you know, toward the end, that's what I was doing. I was hiding bottles. I was, always say in meetings, you know, I'd take a pint and slide it down the front of my pants. Because I knew my wife wouldn't look there for it, you know. But, and, you know, living that life, and my 13-year-old son, you know, he didn't hardly talk to me for about a year. And that was hard. Well, hell, nobody was talking to me, you know. And when I got to AA, I heard laughter. And that's something I hadn't heard in a long time. And I seen men hugging men, which I didn't really know about that stuff at the beginning. I love it today, you know. But I got in there, and I really, you know, my first 3 or 4 months, I don't remember a whole lot. I just remember a lot of faces, and some of those faces are here. I started working these steps, and I started being a part of AA. I started, I think right at 6 months, I started chairing meetings. I got a sponsor. I still have the same sponsor. I could talk an hour about his life. Because it's amazing. And I was living, you know, I was living in Woodstock in this house, and I was fixing to get evicted out of it. This was my first year of sobriety, and they told me to pray about it, you know, pray about it. And, you know, I started taking these suggestions, which, you know, needed to be taken. And I ended up moving 3 blocks over in the same neighborhood. And, you know, and a house was better than the one I lost. You know, it was just one of those first miracles that, you know, in my sobriety. Because I came to meetings and I shared where I was at. And I even had people in AA that helped me move, you know. And I never had that. And so I'm, you know, I moved into this new place, and I'm going to meetings. And at the time, my first year, I was doing 2-3 meetings every day, you know. That's what it took. I still like to do 2 or 3. I did 2 today. But my life started getting better. And, well, things started changing anyway. I found out in my second year of sobriety that I was a diabetic. So now I can't drink. I can't eat. My wife hates my guts. And, but I'm going to meetings every day. And, I'm working this program. I'm taking suggestions from people like Charlie. Where you at, Charlie? There he is. Charlie helped me so much. And my life did start getting better. And at that point, at about 2.5 years, I got this knock on my door, and my daughter had called and said, the Internal Revenue's at the front door, and they want to talk to you. And which, you know, I'd gotten way behind with them. So, you know, I go to meetings and I'm crying about that, and I'm, you know, talking about all this stuff that's happening in my life. And they said, well, you know, you got to face your fears. You got to face this thing. And they wanted me to come down, and it was like 2 days later they wanted me in their office. So, you know, I went down to see them. And at that point, you know, I'd surrendered. I'd done a lot of surrendering at that point to a lot of different things, and that was one of them. And, you know, I figured, well, I could start some meetings up, you know, at the federal pen or whatever, you know. But, you know, I got to face this thing. So I went down, and, you know, I walked in a big room that had a lot of little small cubicles, and there was a young lady that had all my information, and, you know, I took all my paperwork up there, money coming in, money going out, and all that stuff. And she looked at me. She said, "We don't see how you're raising three kids." And I said, "Yeah, you know, that's why I'm here." And they told me if I didn't inherit any money or I didn't hit the lotto over a period of time, you know, this would disappear. And it disappeared. It's about $40,000. And, you know, that's another miracle in my life. So I'm seeing all these things happening, you know, and I'm believing that it's a God of my understanding that's, you know, helping me on the way. And a little bit after that, my stepdaughter, which I call her my daughter, I raised her from the time she was 7, she was going to get married, and, she asked me to give her away. And that was very special. It really was. And I did. It was crazy, you know. I had to come to meetings and talk about that, too, because it was going to rain that weekend, and she had it. She had it up at the Marietta Square, and, you know, we were up under one of the little things out there. And even at meetings, somebody had said, "Well, you know, that wedding's going to be real special because you're going to look out and there's going to be all kind of different color umbrellas. You know, it's going to be a very special wedding." And it was. You know, I've got the pictures of all the little umbrellas that were opened up. So I got to give her away. And she married a gentleman that was in the army. He was getting out of the army, and felt like she's still married to him today. And then I had my stepson, which he's my son. At that time, he was 16, 17 years old. Same one that was with me when I got my DUI. He came in one day and told me I wasn't nothing but a effing drunk. And so I escorted him to the front door, and he swung at me, hit the brick wall, tore his hand all up, and he decided to go live with his real dad, which had never had anything to do with him. And he came back about 3 weeks later and found out there was rules there too. And then he went on his way. About that time, I got divorced, and I was about 3 years sober. And he, at the time, he was very good in football. He had colleges wanting him to come play for him, and he was a senior at Etowah, in the paper every week. And he got into drugs and, you know, women, and quit school. But at that time, I really wasn't there. I'd moved out, and I'd moved in with somebody in the program. One of the first people I'd met when I got to AA, he told me, he said, you know, come live with me. He lived on Lake Altoona. He said, come live with me. If you can't afford it right now, don't worry about it. And so I did that. And, you know, the divorce was pretty hard. Like I said, I've been going to a lot of meetings, and I don't think I ever went to too many. But she thought I went to too many, and she ended up getting a friend at work, and it was kind of hard. And with my first wife, she ended up marrying my best friend in high school's brother about 3 days after the divorce was final, and this one got married 3 days after the divorce was final, and you know, so. You know, relationships, finances, and romances. I've had a hard time. But it's getting a lot better, and my story gets better. You know, at this point, I'm really doing, I'm doing a lot of meetings, and I need every one of them. And my son, when I got divorced, my son that we had together was 9 years old. And that was hard. I was seeing him, paying child support, and doing what I was supposed to do. You know, that's what this program taught me to do. I stayed single for about 3 years, and I dated some women in the program, and some that wasn't in the program. And I finally got to the point with that, which I'd moved out of the guy's house on Altoona, and I'd moved in with somebody else in the program. Some of you know him, Casey. I moved in with Casey. He had two young boys, a couple of dogs, had a family atmosphere, and I felt good there. You know, I missed the kids. And but I got to the point with relationships where, you know, I said, God, whatever. You know, I'm, you know, it's up to you. Because I'm not looking anymore. And Cheryl used to be my... Where you at, Cheryl? Cheryl was my relationship sponsor. you know, we had some softball going, too, at the Howe place. And, you know, that kept me busy for a while, too, because I was real active in that. And we had a ball. We did it for about 6 years around there. We had a co-ed team that took first place 1 year at Hopgood Park. Yeah, Cheryl wasn't. I don't know if she was a real good relationship sponsor, but I went out with this lesbian one time, and she didn't try to stop me. But I figured, you know, I'd just change her over, you know. But you know, life went on, and my life was slowly getting better, you know, and I was still in this surrender mode because I think I've always been in that since I've got here. And then my third wife came into the picture, which is I watched her come in the rooms. I watched her get sober. And I didn't mess with her. too much. I won't even tell the story about the two tickets that to the concert that I had, and she said she had to wash her hair or something, but had front row seats to see Brooks and Dunn. But still have the tickets at the house. I didn't go to it. I came to a meeting. But me and Kay started dating, and we really didn't rush into anything. We dated for a while, and we fell in love. And we got married, and we've got this little girl just around here somewhere. And, you know, that's been one of the great blessings that I have today. And, you know, all the kids that have been a part of my life, you know, my stepkids and my son, you know, they all went through their phases with drugs and alcohol, and they're all past that right now. I hope they stay that way. My stepdaughter, she never had a problem at all with any of it. She's got three kids. They call me G-Daddy, and, which I thought was pretty cool. But after me and Kay got married, you know, we still did a lot of meetings. Always done a lot of meetings. We ended up moving. Her brother had a place off of Glade Road. Had a double wide over there, and we moved into it. Kaylee was born, raising our baby. Life was good. I got a new truck, you know. And you know, for a long time, I seen all these other people in the program, you know, getting new vehicles and getting homes and all this stuff, you know, and I'm thinking, well, you know, when's it my turn? But, you know, it comes in God's time. And we'd lived over there a couple of years, I guess, and there was one afternoon I remember, you know, just talking to God, because I talked to God a lot. I said, you know, God, if it don't get any better than this, this is okay. And it wasn't a month after that, I got a call to go look at a job out in Taylorsville, Georgia, which is about 20 miles out of Cartersville going toward Rockmart. And it was a friend of my sister's, and it was a home. She had the house for sale. And one of the rooms had burned. She'd had a son that was living there using the place as a party house. And one of the bedrooms had burned. He'd left the heater on. And it really didn't do any structural damage. And she called me out there to look at it to fix it. Well, at that time, the guy that had a contract on it, he didn't want it anymore. You know, so I got to looking at the place, and I mean, it's 5 acres of land with a little farmhouse. An acre around the house is 5 foot high chain link fence. It sits on 113 out there on the main drag. And, you know, I just fell in love with the place. And we got to talking to her. And it wasn't because of my credit getting any better. She owned or financed the house. And, you know, it was perfect. It had the fence. We had Kaylee. You know, we could turn her loose in the yard. Didn't have to worry. So we took the house. She owned or financed it for 15 years. She gave me $7,000 of the insurance money to, you know, fix the place back up with. And I do remodeling for a living is what I do for a living. And, you know, that's another one of those miracles. I took the $7,000, I redid the whole inside of the house, you know, carpet, hardwood floors, everything. And I still hadn't painted the outside of it, but, you know, that got us in the house. And, you know, that was 6 years ago, and never been late on a payment, you know, and that's a miracle in itself. But, you know, that's just one of the things that, you know, I never expected out of life. I never expected to own a home. And really, you know, I wasn't the kind of drunk that, you know, was on Skid Row. I'd always, you know, had a place to stay. I've been blessed that way. I could have been there, I guess, but my thinking, you know, my thinking is what got me here. The drinking helped, but, you know, and the thinking today is what I've got to really, I still mean, you know, I need a lot of meetings. I don't know where I'm at or what time it is, but I hope it ain't 15 minutes after I started. but, you know, today, one of the meetings I was at today, you know, it was about 12-step, you know. And I think I've always done that, and I really enjoy that. I've got a couple of guys I sponsor now that came into my life about 3 months ago, and I needed them. You know, I really did. And friends, you know, I look at all of you. I know most of you, a lot of you. And I've had a lot of good times in sobriety. When I was living with Casey and I was single, we went, that was in 1994, we all went to Woodstock. They had the 25th anniversary of Woodstock up in New York. And Casey's, he sells hats, t-shirts, and all that stuff. Well, there was about 10 of us from the Howe place that went up there, and we got up there 2 days before it started and stayed 2 days after it ended. And we all stayed sober up there, and it was really a great, I had a great time. We had 7 tractor trailer loads full of stuff to sell, and we just about sold it all. And we got there, I can remember going out there, and they had stacks of plywood for building things, and before everybody got there, and we didn't know what to do, you know, we figured we had to have a place, have a meeting. So we went out and got on a stack of plywood out there, and we just started having our own meetings, you know, right out there in the middle of the field. And once it all started up, they came out with some flyers and stuff, and there was they had tents with different things on them, and they had a tent there with a circle and a triangle on it. So they had AA meetings, and they had them every hour on the hour for all 3 days of the you know, of that. And I actually got to chair a meeting there, and that was really cool. I don't know if I rambled. You know, it's been a full life, and it took every bit of that stuff to get me here. And today, you know, I'm living a good life. I care about people. I love people. Couldn't do without people. And I really wasn't nervous about coming up here because I know y'all are my friends, you know. And the beautiful thing about this deal is I get to keep meeting them. And just in July and the first week in August, I went up and worked to the a lake house up in Seneca, South Carolina, which is the first exit off of 85. And when I got up there, it's one of my customers is they own a house down in Midtown, which is where most of my work is. I've been on one street in Midtown for about 10 years down there doing remodeling, and I've been blessed in a lot of ways there too. But this couple bought a house up there, and I went up and worked on it. And the first day I got there, you know, I'm staying in this $350,000 home. It's got a refrigerator full of beer. It's got 2 half gallons of liquor sitting there. And, you know, the first thing I did is found the phone book. And I called up the AA. And I went to a meeting every day up there in Seneca, South Carolina. And it was a very small meeting, and it was exactly what I needed. And it kept me sober. And, you know, July the 15th, I celebrated 11 years. And it's been a good life. You know, I had 3.5 years and went back out. I stayed out for 6 months. And I found out when I went back out, nothing had changed. It was all the same. Actually, it was a little worse. And that's what they say about this disease. It's a very progressive disease. And even when I'm not doing it, it's still doing push-ups waiting on me. And I guess that's all I got. And,